Hello, and welcome to the 11th episode of Season 9 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
It's a new year, Graham, and before we draw a line under 2022, I thought it might be as well to look at some of the fines and cases of 2022 that may have slipped under the radar, and make sure we've extracted any learning from them.
Yeah, it just occurred to me, right, it's an interesting expression, drawing a line under 2022. I have no idea where that came from. Anyway, that was just a
accounting, I think, Graham.
I think you're probably right. Yeah. Either way, it sounds like a good idea, Ray. Sometimes it's not just the blockbuster fines that yield important insights with regulatory attitudes, and we need to be minded about those. And sometimes the smaller cases can be useful barometers, can't they? Especially once you get out of the high street and investment bank and into some of the more niche corners of regulated business.
Well, quite so, Graham. So given that, I thought we might start in West Africa.
Well, why not?
And in June last year, the FCA in the UK fined Ghana International Bank £5.8 million for poor anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing controls over its correspondent banking activities for the period 2012 to 2016.
Well, now, Ray, 2016 was quite a while ago. So when did these problems actually come to light?
Yeah, a while ago, Graham.
Wow.
It was at the end of 2016 that the FCA's visit to the bank led to these findings emerging.
Ooh.
Since then, Ghana International Bank has had a voluntary restriction in place, still in place at the time of the FCA fine, as was the engagement of a skilled person reporting to the FCA.
Ooh, 6 years later. Wow. And I note that the FCA are at pains to indicate cooperation and improvements from the bank since the findings emerged.
Yes.
Okay, but what is the nature of the findings, Ray?
Well, first of all, it's worth outlining the scope of the bank's correspondent banking business. They had about 50 respondent banks outside the EEA, so that's what would then have been called a third country, just over half of them in Ghana and most of the rest of them in other West African states.
Yeah, so we ought to say, by the way, for those who are not aware, the EEA is the European Economic Area, which is not quite the same as the EU because it includes other countries who are not in the EU but are part of that.
I like to think of it as the EU plus hangers-on.
Yeah, those annoying people at parties, you think, why are they here? Oops, sorry, Norway. And I read in the report that during 2012-2016 period, 14 of those respondent banks were onboarded.
Yeah, that's right. And that onboarding required by law the application of EDD and enhanced ongoing monitoring, as we've previously covered in earlier episodes of this podcast.
Well, we have. And at the time, there was a Financial Action Task Force notice in place for Ghana, which I guess was a further red flag for many of these cases.
Well, yeah, that's a point that the FCA makes in the report. What's particularly interesting about this report, though, is that it's very specific about the regulatory expectations for specific enhanced due diligence that correspondent banking ought to entail.
Well, that is handy, Ray, so tell me all about it.
Okay, then. The FCA looked specifically at the 14 onboards and during the period in question said that the bank had failed to obtain sufficient information about the purpose and intended nature of business from all 14 respondents.
All 14. Ooh. So perhaps where the relationship is one of correspondent banking, the bank assumed this was obvious, right?
Well, perhaps so, Graham, but clearly that's not good enough for the FCA.
What might it look like if the bank did this properly then, Ray?
Well, I think you'd see an analysis of the respondent bank's business and specifically the proportion and type of activity it proposed would be exposed through this correspondent banking relationship. You'd establish why the relationship was necessary and why the respondent proposed to come to this particular bank, how it would assign flows to this relationship rather than any others it might maintain alongside.
Well, that sounds jolly good. After all, if your controls are looking to identify unusual activity, that's predicated on you having a clear picture of what usual should look like right from the start.
Absolutely. So the FCA also said that the bank failed to perform adverse media checks for 11 of the 14.
Now, we all know that there isn't a hard legal requirement to do any adverse media checks. So what is the issue here, Ray?
Well, the FCA are at pains to rely not only on the hard regulations themselves, but also on the bank's application of relevant guidance. And here, there's plenty of indications from sources like JMLSG, Wolfsburg, and so on, that adverse media is a recommended control.
Okay, so what else?
Well, so far, we've only looked at aspects that aren't really unique to correspondent banking. I mean, you'd want nature and purpose information and adverse media checks for any client, whether they're a correspondent banking client or not.
True. So what's more specific to correspondent banking then?
Well, helpfully, the FCA provides a little list of risk-sensitive measures it says that the correspondent must take.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm. And what's on it, right?
The first is gathering sufficient information about the respondent to fully understand the nature of its business.
Oh, haven't we covered that already?
Well, yeah, but notice here that this takes us beyond just the business it's conducting through the relationship. It says to fully understand the nature of its business, which is wider.
Okay, yeah, no, I see that. And what else?
Well, next is determining the respondent's reputation and the quality of its supervision from publicly available information.
The quality of its supervision.
Yeah, so that would require you to understand how and how well the respondent bank is supervised in its home country, as well as what its local reputation is.
Okay, fine. What else?
Next is assessing the respondent's AML controls, which is kind of obvious for the correspondent banking service, I'd say.
Nevertheless, I see it didn't happen for 12 of the 14 new respondents that Ghana International Bank took on.
You make a fair point, Graham. The next to the FCA's list of musts is senior management approval before establishing the relationship.
Now, yes, of course, in the UK and the EU, this is a hard legal requirement for non-EEA relationships, isn't it?
Yeah, and the bank did a little bit better with this one. It was only absent entirely in 3 of the 14 cases, although illegible for 6 others and added after the event for another.
Oops. And the 5th of the FCA's points, Ray?
This is the last one, in fact. Documenting the respective responsibilities of the respondent and correspondent.
Ah, okay. So this will rely on having a good understanding of what the respondent is doing through its own AML controls. Mm-hmm. So already we're not expecting a great finding for Ghana International, I guess.
Well, no. And the FCA notes that this was absent in 12 of the 14 cases.
Well, that makes sense. But actually, this is pretty helpful as a report, setting out quite clearly, at least our regulators' expectations for correspondent banking business.
Yeah, indeed. One other point I took from it is their expectation that correspondent banking is treated very much as a separate business line, with its own processes and controls distinct from other business lines.
Yeah, well, I noted another expectation, which was there should be clear and comprehensive guidance at a policy and procedure level, and that staff shouldn't be faced with a profusion of different sources of reference for correspondent banking business that they need to refer to.
So, a pretty useful report to look at then, if this type of business is on your books.
Well, I would say so too. What other cases caught your eye last year then, Ray?
Let's go on a trip, Graham, to the UAE, and a fine handed out to Wise Nukud Limited, provider of money transfer services, by the Financial Services Regulatory Authority, the FSRA, of the Abu Dhabi Global Market. And that happened in August.
And this was another smallish fine, wasn't it, Ray? It was about $360,000, I think.
Indeed, but it's a really instructive case, I'd say.
How so?
Well, Graham, there are a number of business models that we typically see where customer risk assessment, as we like to see it applied, or even substantial customer due diligence, aren't undertaken until payments exceed a certain threshold.
Yes. Now, you see that sometimes in payment services and crypto exchanges where perhaps it's not clear whether someone is just accessing the service on a one-off basis or whether there is an emerging ongoing relationship.
Yeah. But certainly as far as the UAE is concerned, this case seems to put the kibosh on much of that. There's a clear expectation voiced here from the UAE regulator that where EDD is required, it has to be completed in full prior to transacting for a customer.
But of course, to know if it is required, you have to be able to apply a risk rating and determine whether certain features, like, for example, PEP status, are present.
Now, we know that all the regulators read one another's outputs, so I wouldn't be at all surprised if this isn't something that catches on more globally.
Well, I think I agree, Ray. I feel the same way about what the regulator says here about thresholds more generally. They say that even where thresholds might be acceptable as a risk mitigant, those thresholds have to be set at reasonable levels when considering the risks they are designed to address.
Yeah, and it considers the example of a threshold set so far above the average value experienced that it would be very rarely exceeded, and thus it's going to prove an ineffective mitigant to the risk it's supposed to be pointed at. Yeah. And I think that can be read across globally.
Yeah, and I can't help thinking that didn't happen by accident. There's another finding in the report, a different one that caught my eye as well, Ray.
Oh, okay, go on.
Well, let me quote from the report. The regulator acknowledges that Wise's process of only allowing its customers to fund transactions through bank account and debit card transactions and of not maintaining account balances for customers in part mitigated the impact or risk associated with Wise's failure to comply with the requirements of AML Rule 8.4.1 brackets C, end of quote.
Ah, yes, that well-known rule. Yeah. You're right, that is pretty interesting actually, Graham. Joking aside, let's unpick it a little bit.
Yeah.
Often, payment firms will say, look, we don't hold balances. Customers make transfers from their bank account or they pay by a debit card. These are all from regulated institutions, so AML checks have already been done.
Yes, they do. And the FSRA in the UAE, in this report, acknowledges that, but makes clear that it doesn't excuse you from undertaking your own AML check. It just says that if you fail to, then the fact that the banks and car companies have this has mitigated the impact, but you've still broken the rules.
It's like hand washing, isn't it, Graham?
How so, Ray?
Well, I might believe that everyone I come into contact with has washed their hands, so that when I've shaken hands with them or have accepted articles that they've handed to me, there isn't a risk. They've all washed their hands, so I don't need to wash mine. But I'd still wash my hands, Graham.
Yeah, because they could all be making the same assumption. So I think you would be right to do that. Right.
Yeah. So the fact that all the money is coming to me or through my services from other regulated institutions who should have performed their own checks does not absolve me of the fundamental responsibility of performing my own.
And that is also how I see it. And clearly, I think it's how the FSRA sees it too.
Indeed. Shall we nip over to Malta, Graham?
Oh, I never mind a trip to Malta. I had a very pleasant one there last year, in fact, to Valletta, which is just the most beautiful city. So I'm going to guess this will be about the ECCM bank then, won't it?
Yeah, spot on, Graham. The FIAU snuck in with a fine for them between Christmas and the New Year, €300,000.
They did, and there's a lot in that case too. There is a section on transaction monitoring, for instance, that notes deficiencies in evidencing proper review of unexpectedly large business transactions. But that is a fairly common and well-understood failing.
You're right, Graham. I thought the interesting parts around this case related to risk assessment, and there are some echoes of the other cases we've looked at today.
Well, now I'm intrigued, Ray. Let's start by understanding ECCM Bank and what it does.
Mm.
ECCM is the ninth biggest bank in Malta by assets,
mm-hmm.
and it offers banking services to international corporate clients, including short-term and long-term lending, deposit accounts, payment services, safekeeping, and administration of securities.
So, fairly vanilla then. No cash transacting, no internet banking, nor credit cards.
I'd say so. Yeah, but notwithstanding that, the FIAU is fairly critical of the bank for not having a more detailed business risk assessment that references the national and supranational risk assessments.
And it looks to me like that has had implications here, because lots of the findings are around the bank's client risk assessment. And we know that any CRA, client risk assessment, is going to rely on having a really robust business risk assessment, because if you haven't identified the key AML risks in your business model and what's driving them, you can't distinguish so easily between customers bringing you more risk or less risk.
So those implications then. One I noted mm-hmm. was that there's no risk weighting in the CRA to recognise the complexity of the company's ownership structure.
Yep.
Talk about a home run in my case. And given what we know of their client basis and services, I'd certainly want one of those if it were me.
Agreed. There's also a note on timing and the CRA not always being run before transactions were processed.
Oops.
Yeah. Now that links this one to the Wise case that we saw in the UAE. And I think the reasoning is the same both times.
Yeah, if you've not done the due diligence, you don't know how safe the transactions are.
Mm. And there was another timing issue, wasn't there?
You mean about periodic reviews?
Yeah, specifically how long it was between customer risk rating episodes. Mm. Now, for me, that's an important part of the periodic review. But at ECCM, that seems not always to have been the case.
And more generally, the criticism here is that a point-in-time customer rating is relied on for too long a time without being revisited.
Yeah, now I'd say that's going to be a real factor in a lot of institutions where maybe the business model or client base is dynamic, or for that matter, where the CRA itself has changed over time, or the business risk assessment or risk appetite.
Yeah, I don't think that leaves out many institutions, Ray, if I'm going to be honest.
You make a compelling point, Graham.
And one final point here is about country risk. One of the things in the UAE Wise case we didn't raise was criticism from the regulator that Wise's risk assessment didn't consider customer nationality.
Yeah, it reflected customer residence, but one feature of the UAE law is that customer nationality must also be taken into account. That doesn't apply globally, of course.
No, it doesn't, but there's a related point raised by the Malta FIU in the ECCM notice, which is mm-hmm. that their country risk view doesn't take into account all material connections. So, for instance, where is the business customer based? Where are they operating from? And from where are the majority of its funds derived?
And I think this does justify a global read across, unlike perhaps the nationality angle.
Yeah, I think you're right, Ray.
Mm. So there we are then, three of the smaller finds from last year, but all of them containing some really useful insights that we can use to check our current practice.
And I can't help notice already this year there have been some interesting finds, which I'm sure we're going to come back to.
I think there was one
yesterday. But we'll leave that for another day. So it is worth saying, isn't it, Ray, that the big regulatory actions, the Santander's and the Deutsche Banks and the NatWest, mm-hmm. they get the attention. But sometimes there is gold in the margins.
That's very true, and we'll keep panning for it on behalf of our listeners over the coming year. So on that point, Graham, do you think we should stick with fines for the next episode?
Well, I've got to say, we'll hedge our bets, given the hijacking that's gone on lately. Should we hedge our bets but say there's some really interesting emerging stories? I mean, there is a bit of me that really would like to talk about Andrew Tate as well. So, there's just a lot to it. So it might be Andrew Tate, it might be fines, who knows?
Yeah, and on that point, Graham, are you a lover or a tater?
I'm definitely I'm a mashed tater, right?
Oh, marvellous. So let's stick that in the diary then. And I have to say, with some reservations, I'm looking forward to it.